Crowley, motivational speaker, author, business coach, coming to you live from Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, I just wanted to introduce this podcast today because it is very unique, individual, and very, very cool. I had a guy, a buddy of mine, Jeb Murphy, who I used to work with. I went to West Palm Beach, Florida back in 1988 with no money, lived in the ghetto, pulled a mattress out of the garbage. You'll hear a little bit about that story. I became a stockbroker, passed a Series 7 test, blah, blah, blah. The only reason I'm saying all this, I have not seen or heard from Jeb Murphy in 20 years, all right? I left West Palm in 1990 and drove my Celica back to Buffalo, New York, and I just connected with Jeb after 20 years or so on Facebook, of all places. We found each other. I found him, actually. Sent him an email. He couldn't believe I was a motivational speaker, and we hadn't seen each other since we were cold calling for stockbrokers back in the 80s. Wild podcast, but we talk a lot about getting over objections, getting through adversity. And Jeb, I tried to get a hold of him this morning around 10 o'clock. He was actually gardening. He was done for work for the day. He is truly living the Saturday lifestyle, life on his terms. Really, really cool guy and a great story. This podcast is unusually longer than the others. It's about 50 minutes long, but it's worth every single minute. I'm thinking about making this a bonus for people that purchase products, but it's free right now to the Everyday is Saturday audience. One word, one note, my voice is a little bit lower than Jeb's in this. The volume, you may have to tweak a little bit. I'm a little more faint than Jeb, but the message is loud and clear. You need to listen to this podcast a number of times to really glean all the wisdom Jeb has to talk about and what we talk about. So without further ado, here you go. My interview with Jeb Murphy after not seeing him or hearing from him for 20 years. Here you go. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, it's Sam Crowley from the world famous motivational website, everydayissaturday.com. If you have not had an opportunity to go over to the website, do it after this call. You don't need to do it right now because you need to be 100% focused on this podcast. This is a really, really wild podcast. Normally our podcasts are probably 15 minutes. We're probably going to go well over that because it's just an amazing story on how I hooked up with my old friend, Mr. Jeb Murphy. You're really going to love Jeb's story and find out how two guys that are really, truly living the Saturday lifestyle, what are they doing, how they, after 20 years, I found Jeb online on Facebook. We're going to talk about how that happened. We're going to talk about the good old days when we were both stockbrokers living in South Florida, all that. I don't want to get too far into it, though. First, Jeb, the champion, Murphy, are you with me?
I am with you, Sam.
Hey, great to hear your voice, man. It has been a long, long time since we've seen each other. True?
Oh, true, true. It's been 20 years.
Back in the day, man. I mean, I've really got to ground people because this is really a phenomenal story.
Well, we were both so young there. I mean, you were 19, I was 23. And
19 freaking years old.
Yeah, you were.
I went down to Florida with a dollar and a dream, man. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. But I get people, first of all, Jeb, where do you live? What do you do right now? And then we'll get into the Florida story, no doubt. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I live in Palm Beach Gardens. So I've been down here since moving from Pennsylvania 20 years now. And I work from home, not very long hours, but I do a few different things in consulting. And today I was pulling out some gardenia bushes that were not really looking too pretty, so that's what you caught me doing at 10:30 in the morning.
Jeb,
today on Thursday.
Freaking morning right now.
Okay. Yep.
And you're done for the day.
I'm done for the day. So I've got when you have a lot of time on your hands, it's amazing what kind of other things you have to pursue.
Actually, you were probably done before we got on the phone just now because you've been picking gardenias.
Yeah. I was actually done before 8 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Actually, see, a lot of people that listen to this show, Jeb, it's one of the highest-rated motivational shows online right now, the Everyday Saturday Show, which you got to be scratching your head, too, thinking, Sam Crowley, this guy's online, a motivational speaker. What? How did it all happen, right? I mean, what the hell is going on? Is rain going to start going up now, you know? But
well, you got me you got me singing Fired Up every day of Saturday, like an hour or two after I listened to your podcast, so please.
Catchy tune, man. It's a catchy
tune. It just goes around in my head. I'm like, fire it up.
Every day is Saturday. It's awesome, man. Chris.
And then I have to think, what day is it? Oh, it's Thursday. Okay.
Oh, yeah, every day, man. Every day is Saturday. Chris Lambert, another listener to the show, wrote that jingle for me. He's very,
Oh, thank you, Chris. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing, man. I've got really talented people listening to the show. But most of the people listening to the show either are financially free or they're on their way to becoming financially free. They really want the Saturday lifestyle. So it's amazing that you and I are talking right now. Why is it amazing? Because I got to really ground people in what's going on. So I just got to give you a basis of why Jeb and I are talking this morning. Back in 1988, I was 19 years old. I just dropped out of the Pennsylvania State University, which amazingly enough, Jeb Mercy is an alumni of as well.
Small world.
Small world, man. But I wouldn't want to paint it, right? Remember that? You know who you first said that was E.J. Kennedy. That's where I got that from. Another friend of ours back in Florida. Anyway, 1988, I dropped out of college. I had about 20 college credits to my name. Most of them were gym and health class. And I decided that it was time for me to go defend my dream in a bar in Bradford, Pennsylvania with a buddy of mine. It was August, and it was a Thursday night. And it was every night I was at the bar in Bradford, because that's really all we did back then. So I turned to my buddy Pat, and I say, Pat, man, what are you doing with your life? He goes, oh, I'm going down to Florida. I'm going to college in West Palm Beach. You know, blah, 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 blah. It's my third year. I'm really excited. I'm going to graduate on time, all this good stuff. He goes, what are you doing? I go, well, actually, I dropped out of college, dude. And just kind of hanging out, you know, trying to really see what's going on. I go, it was about midnight, and you know, I think we did a shot actually together at the bar again and hugging each other. And he's like, hey, why don't you come to West Palm with me? I said, absolutely. Why not? Why not? I got nothing going on. So I told my mom, I remember the next day, I said, hey, you know what? Pat Persini asked me to come to West Palm. He's going to college. I think there's some stuff down there I could probably do. And she's like, what are you going to do in Florida? I said, I don't know, man, but I'm really feeling called to go down there. So the week later, true story, 7 days or so later, I get in Pat's 86 Grand Prix, and we start out to West Palm Beach, 23 straight hours in the car. I thought it was going to be like, it said, welcome to the state of Florida, and I'm getting like my shoes ready, and I'm getting ready to get out, and Pat's like, what are you doing? We got another 5 hours to go to West Palm. Like, God, we've been in the car
long
for
state.
18 hours. We stayed in a hotel a couple nights. Long story short, we end up living kind of in the ghetto of West Palm. I pulled a mattress off the garbage that night because it was garbage night.
Oh, I didn't hear that one. Wow.
Yeah, I still got the photos of it. It was I had a twin mattress on top of a king mattress with no sheets, and that's what I slept on with my clothes and garbage bags. And that's do you remember I used to work at Surrey's Menswear store in the mall? Did I tell you the story?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You had two jobs when you started as a broker.
I'd take the bus every day and to Surrey's Menswear store. I wore the same outfit every day. I charged it at JCPenney on my JCPenney card. It's the only card I had, and I was delinquent on it 90 days as soon as I got it. And so while I was going to work at the Palm Beach Mall for Surrey's selling suits at Surrey's Menswear store, which is a podcast you can listen to, that podcast. I recorded it back in October, November talking about that. But anyway, I saw this ad in the paper. It said, earn $100,000 a year as a stockbroker. So I was like, dang, that sounds pretty good. So I go in for the interview with our buddy Joe. Remember Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was about 23 years old, living on South Ocean Boulevard, renting a house for like $3,000 a month.
He was only 2 weeks older than me, and the kid was driving a Porsche convertible, renting a house on Palm Beach, a big house,
yeah,
and just living the life.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, and I walked in with the interview and I said, "Hey, I want to, you know, do this deal, you know, make $100,000." He's like, "Yeah, no problem. You just got to take the test." I was like, "Oh, now keep in mind, I'm 3 months removed from dropping out of class, and it wasn't just that I dropped out of college. I didn't go to class from January to May. And the only thing I did was work in my work study pool hall job and give away free games of pool. So I was like, "Oh, a test, yeesh. Yikes, that's going to be kind of tough." I go, what do I need to do? He goes, well, you need to buy the manual for $100 and on all the cassette tapes you need to listen to. I was like, okay, well, hey, why don't you lend me the $100 because I don't have it. And then when I pass, when I get my first check, I'll pay you back. He's like, yeah, hey, thanks for coming in. I'll think about that. And I called Joe every day for 3 weeks straight, every day. And I got his secretary, I forget, was it Lisa?
Lisa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Mr. Visconti. Hey, is Joe in? She's like, no, yeah, who's this? Sam Crowley. No, he's not in. It's like he might have been in it, but if it was me, he's definitely not in. So finally he took my call. I said, Joe, man, you got to lend me that $100. You got to lend me that $100 for the test. He's like, all right. But you're paying me back when you pass the test. I go, hey, by the way, how many people pass this test? He goes, well, I think the pass fails like 20% of the people pass it, and that's including if you have an MBA. So I'm like, oh, cool. I'm in, man. study every night, go to Miami, take the test, pass. Long story short, my first day I show up at J.W. Gantt with the Dumb and Dumber Bowl haircut. I'm 19 years old, and I'm ready to change the world. And that is where I meet today's guest, Mr. Jeb Murphy. Jeb, we're sitting in a pit. We're dying out. Remember the pit?
Oh, God. Yeah. That was...
I mean, tell people what we did, because I...
Oh, well, you know, we cold called our brains out. You know, we dialed 300 times a day to people that made $100,000, and you know, we started out as cold callers, where you know we just tried to get leads, and then we were account openers. And I remember at one point I became the top account opener. Of course, doesn't mean I made a lot of money because all the accounts went to Joe and all these senior brokers who were driving fat cars and
right.
you know, basically taking advantage of idiots like us who didn't know any better, and it was the only way we could learn. I mean, we were stuck, you know. They told us what to do. We did it because that was the only way to climb up the ladder.
But
and then right behind me, you know, you're the top account opener, and, you know, so we're moving up the food chain. But, oh, my gosh, we were making poverty wage.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Jeb, you saw the movie Boiler Room, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty much us, right? Probably worse.
Well, you know, that's Hollywood's version. But, yeah, I mean, geez, our bosses, the guys that were 2 years older than us or 2 weeks older than us, were driving Corvettes and Porsches and just swimming in cash. And, we wanted to get there, but it was a tough road to get there.
They'd come out with the baseball bat, remember, turn the chairs over?
Oh, God. Yep.
Get on the phone!
You know, we get paid maybe $75 or $100 to open an account and, you know, open some guy that's worth millions of dollars and find out that our boss made $40,000 just off that one guy that you opened for $100. Insane.
All I remember is I'd get into work at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I never had a cup of coffee until I started at J.W. Gantt. True story.
Uh-huh.
I never even had my first cup of coffee I had at J.W. Gantt. So, because I'm watching all these other guys. Remember, it used to be you could smoke in the office. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody had their ashtray. You couldn't even see. It's like
you had that
right. Suit just to hide your desk. So we'd get in about 8 o'clock in the morning, and we'd get these pitch cards. They'd buy us leads, and we'd have these index cards piled to the top with, like, Joe Smith, you know, Miami, Florida. And then we would call the East Coast until 5 o'clock. We'd go home for dinner for an hour. We'd come back at 6, and we'd start dialing the West Coast till 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Yep. I remember... I think they were paying us $800 a month base salary, and then for opening accounts you'd get another $75. So if you were kicking butt, if you were really knocking the cover off the ball, you were making $2,000, maybe $2,400 a month, and that was for being a superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was
now
just
for
to
me,
earn the
I
right
would
to move
a
76
up. Corolla, you know, with 240,000 miles on it. So I didn't live you know, high off the hog.
Yeah, I was driving a piece of shit too. Sorry
for
my French.
Hey, no, it's okay, man. It's a podcast. We won't edit it, man. It's awesome. Fly. So anyway,
I remember I have to tell a story. The funniest thing, you were opening an account, a very big account, I remember, and you stood up, and this was, I don't know if you do now or probably don't, but you chewed skull.
Yeah.
At 19 years old, and you had a, you know, like everybody that knows somebody does that, you got a
from
cup
Bradford
of
from Bradford, PA, right?
Yeah, from Bradford, PA. You got a cup
you
of
take
shit.
Get out of Bradford, but you can't take Bradford.
Oh, and you stood up and you made a hand gesture and you knocked over this cup of drool all over your desk, and yet you continued to just go with it and open that client. Oh, that was hilarious.
I don't remember that, but I certainly don't dispute that, man. I remember it was me, you, TJ, Ross Marino.
Oh, yeah.
I'm describing these desks that are literally in a corner of the office with all these young brokers that were just pounding the phone. And if somebody was rude to us or something. Remember, we'd order a pizza, send it to them.
But to tell you what, you know, that was a great education, you know, because we're calling people who are millionaires, and, you know, we're trying to make $2,000 a month and just pay our bills before the lights get shut off. And, you know, it teaches you no fear. You know,
no fear,
okay, so you're a millionaire. I don't care. Pay my bills. Buy some stock.
But that's a learning for this podcast, man. That was one of the major key learnings, is when you surround yourself with people that have a lot of money or they're living the lifestyle. It's not even about money. It's just about the freedom. It's about the lifestyle. You'll gravitate towards whatever individual you surround yourself. We were in a pit together, and that was smart to put all these guys, because you felt guilty if you weren't on the phone, you know?
Yeah.
And then if you wanted to have money, you'd go in the executive offices there where Joe and Roy were, and then we'd get the occasional visit from Zwitter and Frank Palumbo. Remember those guys would come
out? Oh, God, yeah.
The guys that owned the company. But you know what? We always wanted that type of lifestyle. Like, someday, man, it's about the dream. I figured
it was
300 outbound calls a day. Eventually, I'd be Joe or Roy, or I'd be, you know, making $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month. But that's what started. I mean, I turned 21 when I was working at J.W. Gann. I remember 21st birthday, we all went out and had a great time. But I remember that right around that time was when I said, man, this is a great, like, work ethic. I don't think I'm going to last. Matter of fact, I'll probably die by the age of 25 if I keep doing this. But it was a great learning experience about how much you got to pay the price, right?
Yeah, definitely. We paid the price. And that pays dividends to this day. You know, what I learned there.
Yeah. Exactly. Making 300-400 calls a day, talking to guys on index cards that have, they're just faceless, they're just names, and you're just figuring, you know, it's a numbers game. I make 400 outbound calls a day. I get 40 people to subscribe to our newsletter. 3 weeks later, I stand on my desk, and I scream into the phone, and I try to sell them stock and open an account with them. And out of those 40, I might get two or three. And it was strictly a numbers game, you know?
Yep.
And, so anyway, in February of 1990, I'd been in West Palm Beach for 2 years. Had great times, man. Remember when we go out on your jet ski on the ocean? And oh my God.
Oh yeah.
That was such a simple life.
Oh, wore that jet ski out.
Yeah, exactly. You had that Jetta. And
yeah.
Tie the jet. Do you have one or two?
It wasn't even a Jetta. It was a Golf.
Oh,
even
a Golf. Smaller. Right.
Yeah.
Volkswagen Golf.
Yep.
And you had two jet skis, right?
No. Joey had two. Of course, he had two of everything. He had all the money in the world. But
yeah.
I had one that I was paying my $100 a month on at 20% interest, this jet ski. But, you know, I used the crap out of it, so I, you know, had so much fun with it. But, yeah, that was a good time. Those were a lot of, you know, there's some, I'm 43 now, and, you know, you think about the people over your lives that really connected with, you know, for what reason. I mean, you were definitely one of those, simply because you always were funny. I mean, you just would point out the hilarity in a situation, you know, with super sharp wit. And, you know, that's what I remember about Sam Crowley, is that, you know, sure, we were starving, but geez, you know, you'd pull out some zingers that were just truths, you know, and pointed out the humor in the situation, even though we were starving. It was hilarious.
I still do it, man, because you gotta laugh to keep from crying. It's true, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta find. You know, you're gonna go through adversity. I mean, I just turned 40 years old last month, and I can't even believe that I'm 40.
Happy
years
birthday,
old.
Man.
Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate that. June 29th. It was awesome. But it's just the fact that as you grow older, you're gonna come into a lot of adversity. I mean, I mentor people, coach people. I know you've done it as a manager of a brokerage firm as well. I mean, you gotta tell people, man, you're gonna get fed a big crap sandwich, for lack of a better word, man. And, you know, you're just going to have to learn how to adjust. You're either, you know, either going to break or you're going to break records. And I think that's awesome that, you know, we find ourselves now literally living the Saturday lifestyle. When you said that about the jet skis at 20% interest, this is kind of a side story as well. We could go on and on. We're only going to do this probably for a little while. But I got Ross Marino negotiated my first car purchase for me. When I went
for the
to
Toyota?
Huh?
For the Toyota?
Not the one that had 240,000 miles on it.
The kind of orangey, yellow.
That one I bought for $400 and it broke down in a rainstorm.
And you overpaid for it.
Right. I only got AM. It was a 4 or 5 year. But That one broke down in a monsoon on a Friday at 5 in Okeechobee Boulevard in West Palm, and I left it there. So Ross says, hey, I need to sell cars. I'll go to Delray Beach Toyota with you. Let's go down there. I'll get you a car. I'll do you. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I'm like, I mean, I'm 20 years old. I've never even thought about buying a car. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to have a car loan? Just to show you how funny it was, I tried to drive it off the lot, and I asked for proof of insurance. And I said, what do you mean insurance? What's that? He goes, well, you got to have insurance to drive the car. So remember, I went to this guy called Joe Mondo. he was about 22 years old. He looked like a Vinny Bag of Donuts, like running a something out of the mafia from his front of his insurance agency. I was like, hey, Joe, I need some insurance. I just bought a car at Delray Beach Toyota. I don't know what to do. He's like, oh, yeah, hey, no problem at all. Baby. We get you going. He took 4 post-dated checks from me.
Gave me
an insurance binder. So I go back. I drive my brand-new Toyota Celica off the lot, shiny red. It wasn't brand-new. Actually, it was used, but it's my new car, at only 21% interest.
Nice.
I thanked Ross Marino for negotiating that deal for me because it was really awesome that my first 70 payments on that car went through. So, another thing that you learn, man. You know, I don't buy nice cars now. I don't pay high interest rates. But so anyway, last month I'm on Facebook, and I opened my Facebook account a while ago, but I never really tuned into it. Now, you know, I've definitely utilized that for a lot of the promotions for Every Day is Saturday and reconnecting with people I used to know. So I go to Facebook last month, June, and I type in just some names of people. I've just gone way, way back to see if I can even find any of these people. So I think, J.W. Gant, he used to work in West Palm. Jeb Murphy. So I type in Jeb Murphy, and up comes Jeb Murphy, Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. I was like, oh, my God. Jeb. So I send Jeb an email and say, hey, Jeb, Sam Crowley, remember me, J.W. Gant, West Palm Beach, and then Jeb responds. And so that's how, after 20 years, we literally had not talked, right?
Not at all. You moved away, and that was it.
That was it, man. I went to Buffalo. That was part of the story I was going to talk about in February of 1990. I loaded up my Celica with anything I had, mainly just my stereo and some clothes. And moved back to Buffalo. Had to stop in Daytona Beach for spring break just on the way home. But I went back to Buffalo and kind of lost touch with everybody again. So Jeb and I connected just last month after 20 years. And I asked, Jeb, what are you doing now, man? You got a job? Kind of. You know, just kind of do my own thing. And so give us an idea, Jeb. I mean, a lot of people that listen to the show, listen to the Everyday Saturday show, and they read the blog and they get the CD and things like that, they know that life exists because they hear about it. But you're a real, live, breathing individual who didn't get there by winning the lottery. I mean, you got there through your own plan. I mean, what was your plan to get to where you are right now?
Well, I guess the plan was the things that I had done years before. You know, I've always been in sales. Well, I taught school for a year and a half, but only so I could comb the want ads to find out what I really wanted to do. And after that, I was in sales. So I continued on. I was a broker for 12 years, and had always been promoted to manager, and I enjoyed it. I mean, sales is kind of like a sport, especially in that arena. You know, you're high five, and it's fun. You know, you bring in all the money, you bring in all the revenue for a company, and everybody else just tries to get in your way. I did that for 12 years, and then in 2000, Christmas 2000, I go away on vacation. The owners of the firm that I'm managing at that time got a little funny with some of the partners' money, and it caught up with them. So they shut the place down when I'm on Christmas vacation. I come back January 2nd to basically fire myself and 40 other people and go to the unemployment line with them.
The way you put it, it's just...
Welcome back. We're closing the doors. Oh, really? Why? Well, don't ask. Okay. I'll read about it in the papers, which I did. For the next couple of years, I read about these guys in the papers. But anyway, so I had to make a change. And, you know, I could have gone back into the brokerage industry, but, you know, the world had changed, and it was time to step off and do something different. So I found consulting. And I still do that to this day. But basically, I'll tell you what I do. My work involves talking to CEOs of Fortune 1000 companies, which a lot of you may wonder, how in the world do you do that? Well, you know, it came from all those cold calls I made at 23 years old.
Yeah.
You know, you realize people are people. Well, the funniest thing about this, so you have to work from home, because when are you going to reach a CEO? You're going to reach him at 7 in the morning, his time, or at 6 o'clock at night, his time. And you know what he's doing? He's working the 12 hours between 7 in the morning and 7 at night.
Yeah.
You know, sure, you might make a million or two or three or 10, but he's there 12 freaking hours a day. And if he's not there, he's in a plane, in a hotel, living wherever he's, you know, because those guys don't control their lives. You know, they don't control their lives at all. They go where they have to go because they got stockholders that are, you know, that are forced them to do everything that they do. You know, so someday, when they're old and gray, you know, they'll get to enjoy their money, but, you know, they've been on a treadmill so long that they won't even know what to do if they have a day off. So the funny thing is, I talked to those guys. You know, this morning I spoke to a CEO of a $1.6 billion company and, you know, basically got my business done at 7:45 in the morning and knowing that he was going to work the rest of the day. And I then figured, well, you know, those gardenia bushes in the front, well, today's the day that they go because they're getting kind of, the bugs kind of like them too much. So, you know, after this, I'm going to go to Home Depot and find some new bushes. But most of those guys never get to see their own yard. They got people that are working on them. But, you know, they'll never actually get to enjoy Mother Nature in their own yard, you know, or anywhere else. So it's really quite ironic. I do a few other things. I've got, you know, a few different sources of income. But my days are my own. And I've kind of forgotten what it's like. I actually got promoted a couple years ago and had a chance to manage people to do what I do, and was forced to go back. And well, I kind of took it as an experiment. I think life is an experiment, and you know, you really ought to just dabble a little bit more than most people just to find out what's out there, you know, have some experiences. And I'd never really been into the corporate world. My dad was a executive for 33 years with a major Fortune 500 company, anyways, I kind of wanted to see what that was like, so I did for 2 years, but the beauty of it, I always knew that I was going to leave. And these guys were slaves. You know, I had meetings with our CEO and all the, you know, high-ranking cabinet members, senior vice presidents and whatever, and these guys were lifers. You know, these guys were lifers. This was their life. They lived in a hotel. You know, they lived away from home. They had no control over their life, and they were hoping someday they could retire, but I don't know what in the world they'd do, because, you know, if they didn't have somebody telling them where to go or what to do or what meeting to sit down in and what spreadsheet to fill out, you know, I can't imagine they could come up with an idea. So, you know, I enjoyed that for a couple of years, and when it was time to get off, I said, you know what, I've learned everything I can about this. I had that experience, and so I decided to come back home again. And, you know, my son's 13 and my daughter's 16. The coolest thing I get to do, Sam, my son's into skateboarding. He's really into it. And he's into he's a videographer. In fact, he just got a new camera, a third one this year. Keep getting bigger and better and more exotic.
Right.
But third camera this year to film his buddies. Well, it's summertime, and I'm the dad that drives him and two or three of his buddies to go skating, and the other dads of these sons aren't. You know, they're at work. So I get to be that dad that takes them every day to somewhere to skate, to do this or that, and, you know, hey, I only have two kids, so it's kind of fun having an extra couple, you know.
Yes.
The more the merrier, you know, that's what I do.
That's awesome, man. A lot of people, when you talk about CEOs, and we've all been in the presence of people that have the title, and it's like corporate crack, you know? They can't get enough of it, and if they don't have it, like their fill of it, whatever it is, the secretary, the office, the agenda that they need to go to meetings that really don't matter, to talk about things that don't matter, they lose sight of it. They definitely lose their identity, and I think that's when we talk about every day Saturday and we talk about, you know, the movement that we're trying to do, and I call it a movement because I don't really know a lot of big words, so that one kind of comes to mind and seems pretty good, but it's about getting back your life, man, you know?
Yeah.
It's about, because if you hang around, we've already talked about this, but, I mean, you are a result of the four closest people you hang around, or you can make that three, you can make it six, but your inner circle really determines how your mindset is. And, you know,
hey,
if you and I hang out, when you got back to me, I literally just set the hose down and I was watering our bushes out front and these flowers that we planted. And it, you know, it was 10:15 in the morning. I just set the hose down. I came in and I was drinking water because I ran this morning. And while I'm running, I'm dodging guys that are texting, like almost killing me on the road, so, that are on their way into work, you know. And I was that guy.
Yeah.
But it's about claiming your life back, because if you hang around four people like you and me, you're going to think it's normal to be home at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I
hang around four corporate slaves. You'll think it's normal to work till 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, most people I hang around with, gosh, I think all of them work from home and have their life.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
so normal.
If you don't, it's normal to us. I mean, being home right now and the sun's up and it's 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that's just normal to me. I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
If I had to get back into a monkey suit and sit in front of some idiot that's going to pontificate about something that doesn't matter, that I'm really...
I tell you what, I thought my IQ was going to go to zero. I really thought the more meetings I sat in, the lower my IQ was going to go. That's when I just had to pull the plug. I'm like, all right, enough of that.
I remember sitting in a meeting one time with a bunch of executives, and I wasn't running the division one time. I was actually the second in command, and I found myself, we had been in this meeting so long in the conference room, everybody had to talk. I mean, everybody had, because if you don't, then you don't really justify, you know, your existence in the corporate.
Yeah.
You don't get a chance to speak or give input. Even though it doesn't matter, nobody cares, and it's not going to add any value, you got to speak. And my boss, like, kicked me under the table. What the hell
are
you doing?
Oh,
no. If you can picture this, I'm lifting my left arm to about my nose eye level and about 5 inches from my face, and I was staring at my fingers to see if they were twitching, and I was just staring at my hand and examining my hand for about 4 minutes. Unbeknownst to me, I was just so bored with what was going on in that room that I found it more intriguing to stare at my hand and see if my fingers would twitch. And my boss was like, "What the hell are you doing?" I was like, sorry. I'm just staring at your freaking hand like a retard. I was like, hey, that's all I can do. I mean, I guess that's all you guys are doing for me, man. You're not stimulating me at all, you know? MBAs in the room and PhDs and this and that. I'm thinking, oh, my God, you guys are just slaves. You got no life. You're all going to go to the bar. You're going to get drunk. Half of you are going to be divorced in 5 years. The other half, you're going to lose all your hair and you're going to be fat and, you know, that's normal. Everybody just thought that was a normal life. So what we're trying to do, and that's why I wanted to bring you on the call, Jeb, is because what you do and what I do seems pretty cool, right? I mean, you wouldn't
and can be absolutely normal. You know, you think back to your corporate life, how much actual work got done in a day? You know, an hour, two, and you gave up eight plus a commute, and that's what's going on. I think the whole corporate world and the world in general is going to change. I think you'll have more people working from home and more jobs becoming obsolete. So, you know, I'm always looking out for the next thing. Well, I've got the time to do it. And that's the cool thing about being at home. I mean, you still do things to create income, but you don't commute. You don't, you know, put a tie on. You don't waste time in meetings. You can get an hour or two of work done and have the other six or 10 or 18 or 20 to do whatever you want to do, and you're just as effective, actually more effective and efficient. That's what is the most amazing thing about it. You can be very, very efficient. Now, it doesn't mean you don't have problems, but, you know, you have your, you know, life goes on. You got your kids, you got your family, you got, you know, there's always issues that you got to deal with, but the cool thing is you're there to deal with them. You know, you're not like, oh, honey, I got to get back to this meeting. You know, you're dealing with the problem right there in your house, right away, in real time, or you're not. Sorry, honey, we can't finish this discussion. I got to go to work, or I got to fly off to, you know, Atlanta or whatever. You know, and that's, you know, you get to actually be there for your life and deal with all those things in real time.
So people that are building the business, Jeff, I mean, they want what we have, and that's not us bragging. I mean, that's just obviously people are plugging into the show because they desire to live the Saturday lifestyle. I mean, living every day like it's Saturday. And we've heard our fair share of rejection, right? I mean, we've heard the
yeah.
word no a couple of times in our lives. And a lot of people have difficulty breaking through that. They, you know, for whatever reason, they hear no enough. And do you remember, I got to ask this question, you remember we had a pitch book, right, when we were
talking? Oh, yeah.
It was a brown leather book.
Yeah, rebuttal book.
So when somebody, gave you an objection, you would literally go to that pitch book. And I remember you, I specifically remember you had this guy. He must have told you no like 15 times. You were trying to get him to open an account and buy
uh-huh.
stock. And you're like, no, no, no. And then you had the guy, I'm like, oh, my God, Jeff, get off the phone. You're not only killing me, you're killing him, you're killing me. I can't stay listening to it. And then I remember you said, Mr. Jones, say no 5 times fast. He's like, what? You go, say no. Did you remember this objection?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. It's like my daughter Madeline probably wrote this thing, my 7-year-old. So you go, Mr. Jones, say no 5 times fast. He's like, he goes, no, no, no.
He actually
no.
did it like a robot.
You go, okay, now that we got all the no's out of the way, my God, I can't believe he used that one. I saw it in the pitch finder, but I never thought somebody would actually use that.
It was just, you know, you got to have fun with it, man. It was the corniest one in the pitch book, but he had already exhausted the rest of it.
Grown men talking about other grown men. We're asking to open up a business relationship, but before we do, we're going to ask them to say no 5 times. I mean, come on, man. But the reason I bring that up is because people don't have fun like we had with the word no, you know? People
yep.
go, oh, my God, no, you're not going to sign up with my you don't want to do business. Next. It's the best 4-letter word in the alphabet, man. Next.
Yeah.
4-letter word in the dictionary, I mean. You know, I mean, how do you get past objection and people just saying no to you? What's your mental?
I, you know, you get to the point where you just don't even hear it. You know, it's forgotten as fast as, you know, because the only thing you end up hearing is yes. You know, so everything else is just blah, blah, blah. Okay, and you just don't really pay attention or stay interested in those because, well, they're not yeses. So if you want to get my attention, say yes, and I'll wake up and, you know, we'll move on. But if you're going to say no, then, you know, I can't even remember who you are. You know, honestly, really, you just get to that point, and that's, you know, sure, a no hurts, and oh, my gosh, somebody said no. But, you know, go take some more of them because eventually you just get immune to them. I mean, literally immune. But when you hear yes, well, you wake up and you pay attention and you collect the check.
And that's really it. I mean, and I know that's you because I know your philosophy on it, and I know that was your philosophy on it. I mean, literally, we would get abused on the telephone from people, and we would just pitch the card in the trash and move on. I mean,
yeah.
And that was the benefit of doing that job to me because as I look back, I think to myself, oh, my Lord, the abuse I took, not only from, you know, the people I worked for, but the client on the other end of the phone, and
we took it from everybody.
Oh,
we took it from everybody.
Every single person. We were the dirt under their shoes. And one time a month, we got to let loose. It was the end of the month party. One time. Do you remember the Christmas party I went to when I had the hem on my pants with the scotch tape?
Now that you mentioned it.
Coat that looked like David Byrne from Talking Heads on there.
Oh, I remember
yeah.
being embarrassed by the clothes I had to wear to the Christmas party. Like, oh, my gosh, this is all I can afford.
Oh, I know. Everybody's in a tuxedo. I remember I had my roommate, Pat, taping the hem to the pants because I couldn't afford to go to the tailor. But yet I'm giving advice on people on how to buy stock, you know. I'm supposed to be the I remember one time I'm talking to a client. I didn't know what to do. I had my first client, they let me work because I think they just, you know, pillaged him so badly that he was like, stunned. He didn't know what to do. So he goes, hey, how's that stock Action Staffing doing I bought? $250. I go, oh, you're getting killed in it. It's $1.30. What? He screamed, and one of the brokers walked by and said, Sam, hold on. One of the things, let me give you somebody. Never say to a client that you're getting killed. That's not exactly how we want to say it. Just say, right now we're realizing some trends, the January effect, even though it's August. January effect.
It was a long January.
Even though January effect was only 1 month, we seem to use that in the summer. Or it just happened, you know, it's a lingering one, you know.
Or the insiders are shaking, shaking loose some cheap stock. It took me a couple of years before I even realized what in the world we were trying to say with that. Not that it mattered.
He's shaking out the weak sisters, remember? They're shaking out the weak sisters on the stock. But the point being, all of that adversity, I mean, if you want to call it adversity, to me, I didn't know any better, so I got to wear a tie every day, so to me, it's pretty cool, actually. But all of those days really formulated. I mean, here we are now. It's 20 years later. We have not spoken in 20 years. We hook up last month for the first time, and we haven't really talked this long on the phone because I wanted to just be spontaneous. And I think people listening, if they're still listening and haven't clicked off yet, they're definitely know it's spontaneous. But here's a couple of guys that ended up with the lifestyle they wanted when in their early 20s. It just took a while, you know. You had to pay the price, man. You had to figure out what exactly you wanted to do. For me, I wanted to be a motivational speaker and encourage people all around the world to live life on their terms. And I know that's where you want to go as well, Jeb, right? You want to get more into the personal development scene?
Definitely. I have enjoyed everything I've done. You know, I look at life as an experiment, and I wouldn't change a day of it up until this point, including today. But, there's always something new and exciting out there, and I think personal development and helping people find their way home or find their way to, you know, most people don't do what they really love, and now I think more people are becoming awakened to the idea that your passion can be your career, whatever it may be, and every single one of us are designed to do something better than everybody else on the planet. You know, we all have a specific gift. And if we're simply doing that, then nothing feels like work. You know, it doesn't feel like work at all. And you can be the expert in your field, and especially with the tools that are available in front of us, you know, with the Internet. I mean, if you're the best at what you do in your town, you may not have any other peers to talk to, but you go to the World Wide Web, and you may have 10,000 people who can't wait to hear what you say and are looking for what you have to offer. It's amazing. And I think more and more people are going to find their way home and are going to need a little help because they weren't raised thinking that that was an option. You know, it is an option. In fact, you better hurry up and get there because, you know, corporations are doing nothing but downsizing. I mean, look at the major companies today like Google. You know, they don't have a staff of 40,000 people. You know, it's a couple thousand. That's all it takes for a major corporation these days.
For billion-dollar companies, though, we're talking about
multi-billion.
Google.
Yeah, Google.
Multi-billion. Yeah.
You know, monster. Yet you're looking at car companies, and they can't lay tens of thousands of people off fast enough.
Yeah.
You know, the world's changing, and you know, the more time you can free up to ponder that, the more happiness you'll find because you'll be gravitating towards doing what you were meant to do, and work won't look like work. It'll look like just life.
That boy, what a powerful phrase. I mean, work does look like life now in a lot of ways, and I mean that in a good way. I mean, you should, and that's part of our coaching program. We help people monetize their passion, I think is the best way to put it.
Like yeah.
My passion is speaking, and I enjoy speaking. There was a point in time I couldn't speak right, but I always did never let that stand up because I'm always up for a good time. I'm always up for a good story. And you know what? All I do is I tell my story from stage, and I get paid very well to do that. But I've earned the right, though, because
yeah.
I've been through the ups and downs and peaks and valleys. I've owned a franchise. I mean, I thought I wanted to make subs the rest of my life and found out after about 4 hours and $250,000 that wasn't what I wanted to do. But you got to find out what it is you want to do. And when we coach people, we just say, what is it you want to do? Well, I can't make money doing it. Sure you can. Absolutely. Yeah. Do you think that somebody would actually pay Sam Crowley if you knew him 20 years ago to stand? I mean, really, Jeb, in all honesty.
No, I was so pumped to find out what you were doing now. You know, it just, you know, in more ways than one, so many different levels. I was just like, wow. Not only is it cool to hook up with Sam Crowley again, but Sam is, you know, is doing, you know, you were kind of on a parallel path. We kind of took a parallel path that didn't connect until 20 years later, you know, realizing the same thing. You know, you're doing it in a different way, but, you know, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, and you were married you were married to Kathy. How long? When did you guys get married?
Yeah, married. I was 2 weeks away from turning 23, so I got married at 22. I've been married 20 years now.
I was gonna say, you've been married 20 years. You've got two children. I mean, that's amazing, you know. And it's just how life, you know, if you don't live it, man, you're just missing out. If you're just going to a job and you're sitting in your car and you're answering emails and voicemails and, you know, like you said, I mean, the corporations in this day and age, man, it's just, I call them the sheeple. The sheeple are just being led, you know, to the slaughterhouse. And
yeah. Unfortunately, it leaves your brain in the pickle jar. You know,
right.
they dangle the next promotion in front of you, and you start thinking about that, and it just never ends in some cases. And you just have to be aware that other options are available. And ask the question, you know, what am I really supposed to be doing? Ponder that for a while, and it'll take you naturally down to where you should be.
Exactly. And I think that's great advice. We're going to wrap up the call now, and I think that's excellent advice. Is, you know, life can become work, and that is not a negative term. That's actually a positive term. And
yep.
You actually can earn a living doing what you absolutely love to do, and it is not impossible to live every day as if it's Saturday. I mean, any of those three statements inaccurate, Jeff? I mean,
they're bulletproof. They're perfect.
So what's somebody going to do, I mean, right now, who's Jeb Murphy, whether it was 10 years ago or 12 years ago, because, you know, I believe everybody has that entrepreneurial dream. I don't care if you're just a corporate slave or not. I think at some point you have it. You may not have it long, or you're hanging around the wrong people that can't bring it out, but somebody that's got that itch and that burn, but they're just afraid. I mean, they're afraid of what's on the other end of the fence. I mean, what advice do you give them?
I'm sure you know who John Maxwell is. He's written tons of books. I went and saw him at our local church, and he says it's amazing how many people he just tells to quit their job. You know, he's done it all, but a lot of times people come to him, I'm so unhappy, you know, with my life, and of course they're spending 8 to 10 hours each day of their life at their job that they don't like. And you know, he said, I really haven't come up with anything better to say sometimes than just quit. Because a lot of times that's what it takes for you to blossom into the next thing, you know. The caterpillar's got to go into the cocoon and he's going to come out a butterfly. I mean, you just can't not make the break if you're going to make the break. I mean, you just have to do it. And in some cases, a lot of the times, a blessing comes as a downsizing. You know, my last company went out of business. I was out of a job. You know, it was the best thing that could have happened. Best thing that could have happened. The industry had changed, as many industries change. You know, industries now come and go so fast. It's amazing. So you have to be ready to retool, or really just pay attention. Pay attention, and you can be current at any time in history, and offer a service that the world needs and is begging for, if you're just aware. And you can't be aware if you're a slave to a job.
Keep your antenna up, and you know, this will shock you. I mean, John Maxwell, I shared the stage with Dr. John Maxwell at an event in Atlanta in March.
Awesome.
I mean, that's how far, you know, my life has come since I was a slave to a job. And I always did. On lunch hour, I never went to lunch with the other people. Very rarely. I'd have to go with my boss or maybe another manager here or there, but I always sat in my office and really just looked to see what else was out there. You know, whether it was buying gumball machines and going around town and taking all the nickels out of there, or whether it was buying a tanning salon or a sub-franchise. I mean, whatever it was, I was always looking for the next opportunity. And finally, I just had to quit my job. And unfortunately for me, what happened is I quit my job, went broke, and had to go back to the company I was running as a rep and sit in a cubicle. I mean, that's a whole other story. And see, a lot of you listening right now couldn't do that. You couldn't go back and be humbled and take a lot of that abuse. But you know what? I loved every second of it because quickly I became the number one ref inside of 6 months, and then after a year said, take care, man. You know, I'll see everybody in my rearview mirror once again. Let's see. And you know what? I go broke again, so be it. But I'm never going back to the job, ever. And
you know, money's really just an illusion. You know, you close your eyes. If any of us closes our eyes, we don't have anything, you know. It's are you aware of the moment and enjoying it right now? And if you can do that right now, then you can do it for the rest of your life.
That's right, man. That's great advice. Hey, we're going to wrap it up. Jeb, great talking to you. Obviously, we're going to be in touch a lot down the road now that we know each other is still alive someplace in the universe.
Yep.
But
so you got to get to Florida. You know, they still have a lot of sunshine down here.
Oh, they do? Cool.
Oh, yeah. And they still got a big old ocean that's 5 miles from my house, so...
Yeah, you know, we see the Ohio River every now and again, but that's about it, man. So what I will do is I will commit to you in the next 12 months. We may even have an event down there. I mean, that would be awesome. My good friend John DeLemmy lives right there in West Palm, one of my original mentors. So we'll get it together one way or another.
Good deal.
And, Jeb, great insight, man. Congratulations on living the Saturday lifestyle, man. I knew you could do it.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Awesome catching up with you.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.